Hey, everybody, welcome to the Piffles Podcast, your premier Saskatchewan Rough Riders podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Greg.
And we were without Amy right now, but she will be here a little bit later on. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at Piffles Pod. You can give me a follow at RealAlexD.
Follow me at Safamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
And give Amy a follow as well at RealAmyD. Give us a like on Facebook as well, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're also on Instagram. Just search Piffles Pod. And check out the website, piffelspodcast.com. Lots of great stuff going up there all the time, especially with the season literally right around the corner. Lots of great stuff going up. Piffles Podcast brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Check out their half-price drinks during happy hour from 2 to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday, and also their summer blizzard menu. And we're going to be going to do a blizzard blitz right after we finish recording this. So
honestly, I'm just rushing through this so we can get to the blizzards.
Right,
so
yeah, show, done. Riders, great. Yeah. Let's go.
I'm just here for the blizzards, really.
Kind of like every week, right?
Exactly, pretty much.
Coming up on this week's show, we have the opening kickoff. We'll talk the latest Rider and CFL news. Tallgrass Apparel engaging with the enemy, Cypress Hills destination area, Piffles player profile. We have one team preview to get to, and that's the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We're going to do that one quick because we've talked about them a lot this offseason, obviously. But we'll just do quick little three questions on that. We have an alumni to talk to a little bit later on. Not going to let the cat out of the bag on that one, but stay tuned for that. So let's get started. Time now for the opening kickoff.
I can't do it. Greg's already laughing. I tried.
So, Rider news, decent amount of roster news. My favorite one happened actually just after we recorded our show last week, because of course it does. The Riders signing running back Trey Mason, formerly of the St. Louis, now Los Angeles Rams of the NFL. He was a third round NFL pick. And this was a guy that had some really good games in his rookie year, tailed off a little bit, didn't really get opportunities there. And then had some legal issues, we'll say. Nothing super serious.
Well, yeah, like I looked it up and some strange things, but nothing like, we're not talking assault, we're talking like mischief, like went on a wild goose chase with an ATV is basically the most serious thing he ever did.
Which is basically called Saturday night in Saskatchewan.
Pretty much. He's going to fit in well here.
And then had less than, what, 20 grams of weed or something like that. So it's not like he had a lot.
Yeah, no.
So... really?
To Deron Cutter, that's a Saturday night.
A couple of cookies, right? So, signing Trey Mason, I absolutely love this move. I liked watching this kid in the NFL. This kid's a burn. He's 24 years old still, and he's got, I mean, he hasn't played in about a year and a half.
And like I said in my piece there on Thursday, or Friday, I guess it came out, was he's, yeah, not a lot of miles on him, and if he can bring back even just a part of what he had at Auburn, he's going to be electric.
The only part that scares me about this signing, I love it as a whole, but the comments that his mom made a couple years back about his mental awareness, he basically had the mind of a 10-year-old at points, and a lot of it was due to concussion-related issues. You have to worry about a guy's health if that's what he's been through, but I trust that the Riders have done their due diligence on this and have made sure he's in good health. But it's one of those things that kind of had me worried when I read it, but...
those comments were, yes, she blamed the football on that. That was also shortly after his ATV runaway. So there could have been other aspects behind it.
Perhaps not wanting to get the kid in trouble and just saying, oh, it's just football thing. He's not a bad kid. He's just football injuries, right?
But those were 2 years ago. Since then, he seemed to keep his nose clean, so to speak. So
rather than disappearing entirely from... the Rams training camp.
But that was around the same time, though. That was all around the same time. It all seemed to be that 2016 fall that all of a sudden he just dropped off the face of the earth and no one knew what happened to him.
If he's got his head on even remotely straight, this is a great deal for the Riders. I mean, we all know it's going to be Messam and Thigpen in the backfield, but if you can add a guy like Trey Mason and he's, you know, pushes for a starting spot, that can only be a good thing.
And this is a guy that could start for this team for the next... 6-7 years as well, too. This is a great long-term move, as well as a short-term move.
Well, Messam's, what, 33? Thigpen's even older. I don't honestly see Mason supplanting Thigpen, depending on what happens after Thigpen.
Yeah, if they're even close, you give it to the guy who's 24 years old, as opposed to the guy who's 30.
I don't know. Thigpen looked great in that first preseason game and last year's run.
He's electric, and he looks great, but Mason is definitely, if he can stick around, he's the guy for the future.
And Chris Jones said he's going to put Jerome Essam on a pitch count this year as well, too, keep him fresh for that playoff run when games, you know, get a little bit colder outside, running game comes a little bit more prevalent, and there's your bruiser, right? So this is a, if you can convince him to stick around even on the practice roster and no team plucks him, this is a great signing. Also keeping the NFL running backs signings going, David Cobb. That one kind of surprised me. I didn't realize he was on anybody's negotiation list. This is a guy who wasn't a star in the NFL, was supposed to be, and that just ended up not working, but another NFL talent at running back.
I used to crack this joke about goalies in the Toronto Maple Leafs back in the late 90s, early 2000s, but Saskatchewan's coming where NFL running backs are going to die. Like, we got Richardson, Mason, Cobb, Stacey. Who else are we bringing in here? Normally, you see the receivers and quarterbacks before you see running backs up in the CFL.
Adrian Peterson doesn't have a job yet.
There we go.
No. As a Packers fan, no.
As a fan of football, yes.
Yeah, I'd love to see Adrian Peterson up for a year.
It's just weird. It's just strange. You don't see the so-called name running backs in the CFL as much as you see like receivers or defensive backs or even quarterbacks.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens there with that import running back spot. You got to think there's maybe one roster spot available after Thigpen's spot. Who knows? We'll take a look at that. Riders also signing defensive back Aaron Ivory and defensive back Reggie Hall this past week, releasing defensive back Daniel Davey, Johnny Maxey on the defensive line, and the two names that most people will recognize here, wide receiver Antoine Grant, who looked pretty good in the preseason last year. And then also defensive back Chris Lyles, and we were kind of calling for that last week. Why was Sam Williams cut and not Lyles? But I guess there it is.
I don't know why it took so long, actually. like we talked about last week, it's Lyles should have been gone before Williams, but...
And Antoine Grant is not a cut because he lacks talent. He's too far down the depth chart on a stacked position. That's like same reason as Johnny Maxey. For all accounts, he looked relatively decent in camp, and... When you're looking at the guys in front of you going, well, our starters are set and we've got youth coming up, I guess you got to go, right?
Well, and does Grant want to spend another year on the practice roster?
Grant is this year's rookie Collins. Collins could play, can't play on any team.
Numbers game.
Yeah, it's a numbers game. Unfortunately, you look at the guys ahead of you and you have to understand, like, unless you blow someone away.
And if the new guys that came in this year are looking just as good, if not better than him, that's one less... That's one more year that you have out of a player than, you know, in the long run, right? So
what you're saying is we should have traded Grant for Peter Diakovsky?
Oh, definitely.
Take player?
Definitely.
I miss Peter.
I do, too.
Good guy.
I can't believe no one's actually signed him up for depth.
He'll be...
Well, once injuries hit in the first couple weeks here, he'll be somewhere for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if he wants to stay out east, just to be closer to home, Hamilton, Toronto, maybe even Ottawa if something happens there, but
I don't know, after the comments he made about Toronto... And
his former team, right?
Yeah. They drug him through the ringer, that guy.
Yeah. A couple other things here. Chad Owens got hurt at one of the training camp days. Didn't participate in the green and white game, which doesn't really surprise me to begin with. But is that a concern at all to you guys going into the season if Chad Owens isn't 100% healthy?
No.
Look at last year. There was times where I swore up and down that there's no way Chad Owens was ever actually going to see the field for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And him not playing for us didn't hurt us. And when they finally put him in, he was a game changer because he had fresh legs, especially at his age. So I honestly, if longer we keep him out, maybe the better it is for us.
Yeah, I'm actually the same thought with you, Greg. We got Caleb Hawley too, and this Caleb Hawley's the sixth receiver, and he can be a three. He could be a two on a couple teams. This kid is incredibly talented. So I'm not worried about that. Do hope that they just don't rush things, even if he's itching to get back. Just hold off another game if you can. Don't rush him back. Obviously, unless other serious injuries happen, then I guess, yeah, rush him back a little bit. But I don't think that's really anything. We haven't really heard any updates about it, which is probably a good thing. If it was serious, we'd probably hear something by now. So I think this is just a minor, let's just keep him out a little bit and go from there. So Chad Owens probably missed first little bit of the season anyway. But
it was a foot last year, right?
Yeah.
And those can be tricky. Is it a foot again, or does anyone really know?
His foot got stepped on by a lineman, I believe.
Yeah. And that's the thing about foot injuries. You got so many small bones and ligaments and tendons in there. They take a while to heal.
Now, the big topic that came up this past week was Chris Jones was approached by other teams about Brandon Bridge. Hey, what are your thoughts about trading him? So we have Zach Kolaros, and as much as people still want to think this is an open competition and Brandon Bridge, you know, deserves that starter spot, he is not the starter. Zach Kolaros is our game one starter, and that's just a fact. Would you guys trade Brandon Bridge at all this year, seeing as he's on a one-year contract, new CBA next year, hopefully, that might have Canadians count in the ratio? I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but do you trade Bridge now while his value is probably at its highest?
To me, that depends entirely on how much faith they have in BJ Daniels and David Watford. The offer to take Brandon Bridge would have to completely blow the Riders away for it to even be a discussion. I mean, the last thing we want to be is a team like Winnipeg without, you know, a veteran backup.
At least this wouldn't cost us 70 grand.
But it's, I can't see a trade. I tried to look at one. I tried to formulate one in my head that would work, and there's just not a trade out there that would make it worth it to me, because he's not that expensive either.
But you also got to look who's in the market for an actual quarterback. And besides the previously mentioned Winnipeg, I'd say Montreal is the one who's knocking on the door right now, because are they really going to be rolling Willie and Pipkin and Schlitz? And
I think it's Drew Willie.
And I'm sorry, if you're the Riders, there is no way you make a trade with a team in the West. Zero. I don't care how hurting Winnipeg is for a quarterback. If they need one, you can't boost
let
up.
Let them suffer. Let them suffer.
I agree, but there's no way Winnipeg would make that trade anyway, because the ask would be too great.
Yeah. The only team that makes sense is Montreal.
And Montreal, and you know they're trading for Bridge because they want him to start. Not to be a backup. They want him to play now.
Now, if Trevor Harris's injury was more serious than it is, maybe Ottawa would have been that team that knocked on the door.
And very well could be, but either way, you know, as the Riders, you know, if they're asking to trade for Brandon Bridge, they want him to start. So the ask is going to be, you want a starting quarterback? You're paying for a starting quarterback.
I want Brad Sinopoli plus.
Yeah.
And draft picks.
And draft pick. It's going to be a ton of draft picks and a pack and a player that can play now.
Yeah, it would have to be a top-end Canadian and more. I mean, you're talking about a quality quarterback in a quarterback-driven league.
Don't get me wrong. I love having the 1-2 punch, but if you can get value back for a player who's most likely not going to be here next year no matter what, you make that trade all day, every day.
You have to listen to all trade offers. Doesn't matter how ridiculous they are. You listen to all trade offers, and maybe something, you know, comes up from that eventually, right? You don't trade Brandon Bridge this year at all. This is all in. This is a 2013 version of this team, just without the Grey Cup being at home. This team is all in to win this year. I don't think that Chris Jones is not worried about next year. Case in point, our two quarterbacks are both only signed for 1 year. You don't trade them, especially with the concerns or the questions around Zach Kolaros' health. And even though he was healthy last year, he was 0-9. If he's going to be timid in the pocket and not look all that good, because we haven't seen him in a game yet, and we'll see him this preseason game coming up on Friday, assuming the full first half with the starters, if he doesn't look good, Brandon Bridge, that leash on Kolaros might be pretty short.
I think we're going to know by mid-July whether or not they'll trade Bridge. We're going to see where a team like Montreal is, and we're going to see what the Riders have with Kolaros. And if Jones and company thinks Kolaros is going to last the season and be the guy, I could see them pulling the trigger.
All right, time will tell on that. Riders also announcing that they're going to have the Humboldt Strong game on June 30th against Montreal, where they're going to have a, you know, honor the Humboldt Broncos of the SJHL after the bus crash there. They just had their practice in Humboldt just after the green and white game, had a community barbecue, and the sights and sounds there were just fantastic. It was great to see. It was a very classy gesture. Great to see a community that hasn't had a chance to smile a lot in the last 2 months, to see them out there and smiling and having a good time and being brought together by something completely different. And it was football. And it really does show that this team is Saskatchewan's team. It's not the Regina Rough Riders. They're the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And I thought that was a classy thing. Obviously, with the game being announced on June 30th being the Humboldt Strong game, grab your pins. They're going to have videos before the game. Halftime show as well, too. It's going to be an emotional night.
It's not going to be a dry eye in the house.
No.
No, it's going to be good. And that's one thing, nice thing about the Riders. They know they're Saskatchewan's team. And that's the reason why training camps in Saskatoon. The Riders play here, and they go to every small town for every event if they can make in some way, because they are Saskatchewan's team. And it's great to hear the players that are, they're touched by it too. And Jerron Carter was like, there's not a player here who hasn't rode a bus. And I think that's why this humble situation affected so many people, is because we've all been there in some form or fashion.
Yeah, and I love what the Riders have decided to do with this, with the, they wait a couple of games into the season, get, everybody together. And they're not just bringing back players and family. They're bringing back first responders. They're bringing back, 250 people from the Humboldt community. That's a big gesture on behalf of the Riders to let a community know that they're in their thoughts.
And they'll be wearing the Humboldt strong bumpers on the back of their helmets all season too.
Love that.
Another classy thing by this team. So that'll be really nice to see, and I can't wait for that game, because that's going to be it's going to be a real emotional night.
I kind of miss it. I just found out the other day I'm going to have to miss this game. So I wish I could be in the stands, but I know I'll be watching it on TV.
Yeah, there'll be something nice done for sure. Now, moving on here as well.
The room just got so much better.
The room got better because Amy just walked in. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Hey. Shaking.
Oh, just podcasting.
All right.
Talking football. Now, also announced on Tuesday, the CFL is going to have a salary cap for coaches and football operations staff. This is going to start in 2019. So we already have a salary management system. I won't call it a cap on players, but they're going to do this with coaches and coordinators and scouts and whoever else is deemed, in this 28-person football operations. Before I share my thoughts on it, what do you guys think of this?
First of all, they need to define what counts as football operations, because there's going to be a lot of salesmen in the Saskatchewan Roughrider front office. A lot in
the, right. Is it going to count for front office people too?
No, not like ticket sales and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't count in there. This is for like head coaches, all coordinators, GMs, I don't know if president is in there too, but it could be.
It's basically the sideline staff for the Riders plus, or for the CFL plus GMs for the most part.
And they're going to cap it at 28
and
people.
Scouts aren't included in this.
I thought you were going to say 28,000. I was going to say, no. What the hell?
No, 28 people.
They announced after that they would also be looking at something similar for scouting operations.
Okay, so see, that would make sense then.
Coaching, the coaching staff, from what I understand.
The Riders right now have 15 coaches on staff. They're four above because it was going to be 11 coaches that they'll allow. So they're going to have to fire four people.
There's a bunch of guys sitting there going, am I going to have a job next year?
Yeah. So that's why this move is really confusing to me.
I think it was kind of ham-handed. There should have been a transition period going, okay, 2018, we announce it. 2019, get your house in order. 2020 is going to be the start of this.
2019 is fast. That's next season.
Yeah. So you literally are going to have to go, okay, everyone who thinks they have a job, step forward, not so fast. This is the way this is going to come.
I really hope some team does that.
It's going to draw straws to see who sticks around next year. My issue with it isn't so much that it's going to limit teams and cause, the Riders to have to fire four guys. It's that across the league, you're going to see a shortening of these coaching rosters. That's less positions. That's less money. That's less reason for other coaches to get involved. You're not going to see as big of a change in scenery, new coaches coming into the league. Why would they? There's just not enough space. There's not enough money. There's not enough movement.
And my concern with this goes off that point. Let's say you have a defensive coordinator on. Let's say we want, for whatever reason, Chris Jones gets fired. Hypothetically,
your mouth.
I know,
you just
but
made a lot of people happy.
I was going to say the city or and a lot of people mad of now. Saskatchewan, the province of Saskatchewan just got a lot happier.
I don't know anymore. We can talk about that another time. I don't.
All the
Chris Jones is
people.
He's grown
pretty
on
well
people.
Here.
Ollie
yeah. Oh, yeah.
at work just got a lot happier.
She's a crazy woman. So let's say that we need a head coach, or any team needs a new head coach. They really have their eyes set on this defensive coordinator from BC. We'll say. Doesn't matter who it is. How are you going to convince him to come over? Well, with money, right? You're going to get a raise being a head coach. But if you're already close to that cap number, how can you justify paying more to somebody?
How can you justify
paying
more for players?
Well, you have to cut something somewhere. So if you're already set with your team and whatever, but you really want this guy to come over.
This might be a situation where you got to cut a running back coach in order to sign a head coach to sign a cheaper running back coach.
Yeah.
It's going to work the same way as a player.
You're going to see teams skimp, and I use that term lightly, on the lower end of the coaches just to give the Chris Joneses or the Dane Dickinsons huge
contracts. And when you have a Chris Jones making $500K, allegedly, or $750, whatever he's allegedly making, and the whole salary cap is $2.7 million for 28 people, that leaves less than $2 million for 27 people. They're getting paid $93K.
And
you're still going to want to have a strong offensive coordinator, strong defensive coordinator as well. So they're probably not making just that $93K. They're making $200, $250, let's say, just spitballing numbers here. Then you've got to automatically start paying some guy $60K. And is he going to really want to take a coaching job for $60K?
Well, use the Riders. Speaking of Jones, you got O'Day, you got Murphy in there as well. The three-headed monster GM that we have, where everyone's like, only the Riders can afford it. And rumor is they're getting over $1 million between the three of them. So, yeah, so there's half your thing to sign the rest of your coaches. Now what?
That's going to cause a lot of issues. And it doesn't bother me so much that, yeah, the Riders are going to suffer a little bit. Other teams have more than this number 11 magic number for football ops too. So it's going to hurt other teams as well.
As a CFL fan, I like that the league is looking at ways to level the playing field. That part I understand. I just don't think they're going about it the right way in this instance.
This seems too reactionary, and I don't know what set this off. Like, this seems to came out of left field.
Yeah,
all the other stuff that Ambrosi has reacted to and made changes for this quick, something set it in motion. This just seemed to come out of left field. There was no warning.
Maybe it's because the Riders, between three guys, pay them rumored $1 million and other teams can't afford to do that.
I think there's seven teams, I won't say Toronto, but I think there's seven teams that complained about how much the Riders have on staff. I honestly think that's what happened, and this is not okay because we don't have the funds to match that.
I think they could fairly limit the amount of people you could have on staff.
I'm okay with that.
But not the money.
But if you can afford to pay your head coach $1 million a year,
and you want them long term?
You're wasting your money. But
then you have to flip it around and go, well, if you could afford to pay your quarterback $1 million a year, right? That's what people are going to go with that. But players, it makes sense. Coaching, no other league that I know of has coaching contracts.
You still have to pay your coaches after you fire them. If they still have 2 years on their contract, you still have to pay them for those 2 years. Is that going to count in there too? Because how the hell are you supposed to sign somebody if you're already paying somebody else for 2 years? You don't want to stick with that suck coach for another 2 years.
Could you imagine how many years of Greg Marshall as our head coach?
Right?
Oh, man.
And Corey Chamberlain? We were still paying him for 2 years. Yeah, and he was 0-9.
Yeah, we're paying Marshall and Chamberlain at the same time.
Yeah.
Winnipeg was paying Lapo to talk on TSN and only to hire him back as their offensive coordinator.
Yeah. I don't know. You're stuck with this guy for the duration of his contract. But if you're like the Riders in 2015, you're starting out 0-9. I don't want that guy coaching my team anymore. He sucks.
Just wait for the coaching union.
And they're talking about starting up a union, which is absolutely the right thing that the coaches and front office should do when this is enforced. Like unions or don't like unions, that's absolutely what they should be doing.
That's going to be an issue.
Because if the league wants to regulate players like that, and they're going to regulate, and they have the union, and they want to regulate coaches, they should have their own union too.
Agreed. However, when you got like Chris Jones, he's both management and a coach. So you're in a situation that where it's not going to work. But
He's in and out of scope.
Yeah, pretty much. So.
I'm curious if there's going to be some really massive contracts done at the end of this year for head coaches, GMs, all that kind of thing. Hey, let's give Chris Jones $5 million, but your base salary is, for the next 5 years, is $20,000.
The old Marian Hossa contract will sign you for 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm curious to see if that's something that's going to come up as well, because
especially coaches get signing bonuses now too?
Probably.
Yes, they will now.
If they're going to be regulated with a salary cap, yeah. I assume so.
Could you imagine had $500,000 at the end of the year, next year, and you go, well, I got lots of space in my coaching cap. I might as well throw that money around.
Absolutely. Right? Same thing with players. So that's a story that's going to keep developing, and we'll see what comes out of that. And the final thing I want to get to in the opening kickoff before we move on here is Johnny preseason, Johnny football. And TSN is now airing the Ticats week 2 preseason game against Hamilton. Everybody's losing their mind. Well, how come Calgary doesn't get any of their games broadcast? Show the Rider game at home instead. People want to see Johnny football, whether they want to see him succeed, whether they want to see him fail. And we've talked about that almost endlessly on this show, so we're not going to get too much into that. But RDS, which is TSN's French affiliate, was already scheduled to broadcast that Montreal game. They have the trucks all set up there. They have the cameras and everything all ready to go. All you have to do is send 2 announcers to broadcast on TSN in English. And it'll be Rob Black and Dwayne Ford, I bet, who are out there in the East for the majority of the time anyway. So this is a no-brainer. It's going to cost you literally nothing, and you're going to get a ratings bonanza with Johnny Football probably starting this game from the sounds of it and probably playing the full first half. I love this. This is a no-brainer move to me. It's going to generate a ton of views for TSN, and it's great for the league.
What we saw with the ratings last week from the Hamilton game versus the Rider game, the Riders pulled in, 305,000. And the Hamilton game pulled in 310. When was the last time a game involving Hamilton and Toronto outdrew a game involving the Saskatchewan Rough Riders? Don't tell me people don't want to see Johnny Football.
People want to see him, whether they want to see him fail or succeed.
And the good news is it's going to help the ESPN's going to love it right now, too.
Oh, yeah.
And you know them being a partner with the CFL, they're like, hey, do you mind putting this one on so we can show it? And they're showing it.
Mm-hmm. He's not going away.
No. Nope. They would be crazy not to put this on if they have the ability to do so. I love it.
And I said this in my takes. By week 5, he's Hamilton's full-time starter. And I truly believe that.
5 is here, isn't it?
Week 5 is here.
Gabos! Yes, Gabos!
Nah, he's changed. Anyway, we won't talk about his stats for the game. He had a pretty good, a decent CFL debut in a preseason. We won't get too much. We won't go into that, but we'll see what he can do this Friday.
Stats or not, all that mattered was that play where he eluded the tackler and threw across his body to an open receiver. And that's all anyone cares about, because that's the way he plays.
Flip that with the pass or the play where he ran 20 yards in the wrong direction and then threw it out of bounds. Not understanding the CFL rule. So you're going to get the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And we're going to see it live. Well, not live. Eventually we'll see it live.
How many turnovers were in that game?
10.
10 for Hamilton. I think there was 13.
Didn't I tell you there was a ton? I watched half of the game, and then Penelope was pretending she needed to poop her pants, and then we sat out in the rain for the rest of it.
So. Butthole!
Okay, we got to move on here. The opening kickoff brought to you by Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Time now for our Tallgrass Apparel, Engaging with the Enemy. So as the Riders are playing Calgary this week, our enemy is going to be a Calgary Stampeder. We had a chance to sit down and talk with the player who fumbled the ball in the Grey Cup that let the Argos score the game-winning points in the 2017 Grey Cup. Yes, we asked him about it. Here's our conversation with Calgary Stampeder's receiver, Kamar Jordan.
Obviously last year, not the finish that you guys wanted.
Right.
But after the game, in the locker room, what was the reaction from the teammates? Like, were you guys all kind of like... was there any separation, or was it just, you know, we're all a team together?
It was a little bit of a lot of different emotions all over the place. I feel like when we first got in the locker room, I think everybody was just still in shock that we even lost the game. People throwing equipment around and stuff like that, but not too crazy, you know. I mean, like I said, I think everybody was still in disbelief. And I feel like after some time, after everybody kind of got a little time to cool down and stuff like that, everybody was, like, embracing each other, like, just telling everybody, like good season and happy playing with you and stuff like that. So I feel like we came together as a team more as a time. But when we first got in there, it was just crazy. We just... Everybody, it was just a lot of emotions running wild.
We had a similar loss to the Rider fans in 2009. We lost on too many men penalty.
Oh, wow.
So Montreal missed the field goal at the end of the game. We got too many men penalty.
And then they hit it. Wow.
Next one. So we kind of know that that kind of feeling getting checked are almost kind of taken away from you.
Right? Yeah.
Do you find that that's going to build character for the team going into 2018? And will that kind of take you over the hump and get you back in there?
I don't know, man. After, I think if that was our first game there, I think the fact that we lost two, I feel like you kind of just got to get back to basics and just play football, not really necessarily think about that redemption thing. Last year was all about redemption, and then we got there and lost, so it's like you can't use that as motivation no more. You got to get back to basics one game at a time, just getting yourself better each and every game. So by the time the end of the year comes, we're playing our best football. I feel like last year we wasn't playing our best football at the end of the year. We went like on maybe a 3-game losing skid going into the playoffs. So, I mean, we were able to recover against Edmonton in the Western Final. But I feel like our focus is just to get better. And I'm sure Dave will say that to us when we get in meetings and stuff like that. But I think just kind of your focus just to be where you are right now. Whoever we're playing right now, focus on them. Get better every week, and then if we handle business like that, then we'll get back to where we want to be for a third year.
Now, for yourself, kind of away from the team, do you set yourself any kind of individual personal goals when you head into the season, and can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to be one of the top receivers in the CFL, and I want to be one of the top receivers that ever came through Calgary while I'm here. So, as far as numbers, I'm not really a numbers goals guy. I don't want to set a ceiling on myself, so I don't really set those type of numbers. But I want to get 1,000. You know what I mean? But I just want to be really. My goal for next year is to stay healthy. I want to play all 18 games. I haven't done that yet, and I feel like if I do that, the numbers will come. So that's not really, you know what I mean? So yeah, my focus is just come in every game, focus on every one game and get better every week, play every game, stay healthy, and then everything else will fall along. As far as us winning games and us getting to the Grey Cup, I feel like as long as everybody kind of focus on just getting better, improving it, everybody get what they want, and we'll all be where we want to be at the end of the year.
So outside of football, what keeps you busy, especially in the offseason, besides training?
When I went home right after Calgary, going home to my son was able to the best distraction I was able to get away from football. That dude is crazy. And I kept him super busy when I got home. Put him in basketball. I put him in training. And I was able to – I picked him up from school. I was basically like the house dad when I got home. And I was able to kind of get my mind off football and stuff like that and just focus my attention on him. So usually I'm home. I stay home for maybe about 3 months. And then – Usually after the Super Bowl, which is what I did this year, is when I go train in Michigan, is where I'm at now, where I came from here. I go out there and train. It's just better for me to train in Michigan. I got a trainer out there, Jeffrey Johnson, I've been training with for seven years now. And I don't really know too many people in Michigan. It's better for me. It's no distractions. I could kind of just focus on football, focus on lifting and just getting better without people call you, ask you to go out or go get a drink, go get food, or whatever the case may be. So this is the best bet for me.
Now, if you weren't playing professional football, what do you think you'd be doing?
Well, I actually have a big interest in like video editing, videography, and stuff like that. And I've been editing videos and stuff like that since maybe 18. I was 18. Like highlight tapes and all that stuff. I always did that. I always did my highlight tapes and stuff. But yeah, I want to, whenever football's over, I want to do a little more now, but I want to transition it to that video editing, videography thing like that. And I feel like that'll be, if I could get into that, that'll be another dream come true, and that'll be something big, because I feel like I was able to achieve like two of my dreams in one lifetime, you know what I mean? So definitely like the videography thing like that is something that I feel like I would be into if it wasn't football.
If you could sit down with one person in the world right now and just have a chat with them and think about absolutely anything, who would it be and what would you ask them?
I think it would be Jay-Z. And I don't really even know if it would be anything specific. I think I would just want to have a conversation with him and just talk to him about everything. He just I feel like he has so many different experiences, and I feel like that's another person who just lived so many different lives and won lives, like played football. I mean, wow. He did rap. He's like one of the richest businessmen in the world now. Like, he owned part of the Nets. Like, he just did so many different things. And it just be dope to have a conversation with him, just see what drives him every day, like, to get up and try different things and something. Like, I feel like when, like, rappers, a lot of rappers, like, or musicians, period, like, they make their money there and they kind of cool where they at. I feel like he's just always looking beyond, like, he always looking forward, looking ahead at the next business move. And I think just having a conversation with him would be, like, the most information I could get from anybody.
Now, one last question for you. It's one of the most important questions we ask every player. Dogs or cats?
I hate cats. I hate cats. Definitely dogs.
Stamps receiver Kamar Jordan here on the Tall Grass Apparel, engaging with the enemy. And you know what? When we talked to him, props to him. He owned up to it, and he was very open about talking to it. I felt bad for the kid. I as much as I like seeing Calgary lose, and trust me, nothing makes me happier than seeing Calgary lose, I don't like seeing a kid have that happen to him. Like, that's just, and then get, have, you know, a veteran receiver like Marco A. McDaniel throw him under the bus. But Marco A. got cut, so kind of karma in itself.
I have to say, I love his response, and he's owning up to it. He's accepting that he made a mistake. Yeah, he may have cost his team a Grey Cup championship. He owned it. He accepted it. He's ready for this year, and he's coming in hot.
I expect big things from him this year, too, actually. I think he's going to have a good year after that.
Now, speaking of Stamps, Riders are playing the Stamps this upcoming Friday, June the 8th at 7:30 p.m. in the home preseason game for the Riders, the final tune-up of this preseason. To get a little preview from the Calgary side of things, let's talk to Barry with the CFL Horseman Radio podcast. Barry, thanks for joining us.
Hey, not a problem. Good to be with you guys.
Now, first question I have, Calgary Stampeders training camp, who is the big standout from the Stamps side of things?
Now, are you looking for a rookie, or are you looking for a guy who maybe has been here before but his role is stepping up?
Let's go with one each.
All right. The guy to me is at the running back position, and that's Terry Williams. You guys know you've got Jarrell Messam back in Saskatchewan, and that running back role has been one that the Stampeders have had locked down for years, you know, with Joffrey Reynolds, John Cornish, and then Mr. Messam in there. So now that's a big unknown. Terry Williams had that breakout game against Montreal last year, and he rushed for 156 yards and looked like an all-star. But, you know, then he's back on the bench. He looked really good, ready to go last Friday night, and I really think that he's the man to beat at that running back spot. I think the challenge there for the Stamps is to figure out if they're just going to solely use him in the backfield, because he also looked really good in the return game. But I think he's really cemented that role as the starting running back, and if there's a little bit more to that, I think, you know, well, we'll see what the team does with that. As far as rookies go, I don't know if there was any one guy that stood out to me. Like, personally, I'm a former DB from decades ago, so I like to watch those guys closely. And a couple of guys, you know, kind of flashed a little bit there on Friday. And one is Gump Hayes, and he's a little guy. He's only about 5'9", but he's got a lot of speed. And Trey Robertson is another one. I think the defensive backfield is going to be a critical part, because Tommy Campbell, of course, went off to Montreal. And Siante Evans, the all-star corner, he's also nursing an injury and probably isn't going to be available for the start of the season. So you're going to see some young guys in there, especially too with Josh Bell going up into the coaching booth. So to me, look for some of those young guys in the secondary when you're looking at rookies.
Now, if you, this time of year, always looking at those question marks, who's the number one question, or what is the number one question mark on the Calgary Stampeders roster?
By far, it's backup quarterback. And I know you think, well, you know, Andrew Buckley, what did he do in his couple of years with the Stamps? You know, certainly that short yardage game is what the backup quarterback is going to do. But in the CFL, you have to have two quarterbacks that you can count on. And, you know, Buckley would have still been a question mark for the Stampeders if he had to carry the team for a few games. But now with him gone, and the most experienced guy back there is Ricky Stanzi, the NFL journeyman, and he's just into his second year. From what I saw on Friday, he's got a long way still to go. So if I'm Dave Dickinson and John Huffnagel, I'm hoping that Bo Levi Mitchell stays healthy for the entire season. One interesting prospect to me is Larry Brim. He was a late signing to camp, and to me he looks promising. Dickinson says he's got the all-around game. At the game there on Friday night, a friend of mine was making comparisons, I think a little bit premature, to Tracy Ham. Just a real short, stocky guy, 5'11", 209, but he had the only touchdown pass for the game, and if he can pick it up, I think that he'll definitely have a shot at number three, maybe, you know, push for number two.
You mentioned Bo Levi Mitchell. How long do you think the Calgary is going to leave the starters in on this tune-up game?
You know what? They got to get a good look still at some guys, but they got to get ready for the season. I think Bo is going to get maximum one quarter. Didn't quite get the full quarter, but in this last game. But I think Bo gets a quarter. I really don't think that the especially with the receivers that they had a chance to really get everything together in the preseason game against the Lions. After that. There are some starters, in fact, a lot of starters that didn't play in that last game. So I think you're probably looking at some guys like Alex Singleton, some maybe guys along the defensive line that'll probably, you know, get some playing time so they get a little bit of tune-up for the regular season. What I'd also like to see is really what happens with the linebacking core at the will position. Because we've got a lot of guys that are potential starters in that position, even with Deron Mayo having to step back and retire with all the injuries he's had. Malik Harris is a guy that stepped in for him last year, looked good, got injured. Then we had the rookie last year, Jameer Thurman, who stepped in and looked good. So that's going to be a real good battle, so I'd like to see kind of where those guys are. And also, as well, too, we've got a real good depth at national defensive tackle. And one of the writers, former guys, S.A. Marad Ray, he was not in the BC game, so I'd like to kind of see what he can do as well, too.
Super nice guy as well. If you ever get a chance to talk to S.A., definitely talk to him. Great big smile on his face, and you'll enjoy him over there in Calgary. He was one of those guys I was actually upset about the Riders losing this offseason. So, Barry, thank you so much for joining us. It's going to be a really interesting game this upcoming week, considering it is just a preseason game. And we'll talk to you later on.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
There's Barry of CFL Horseman Radio, proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. If you want to hear some Stamp stuff, check them out. A lot of great stuff going on there with CFL Horseman. Now, I said that we're going to get to this really quick, and we will do this. The team preview this week is of the Riders. Now, I have three questions, and I just want one line from you guys, and that's it on these. Biggest signing that the Riders had this offseason?
Travis Bond. No question.
Zach Kolaros. Because they traded for him, but they signed him.
Zach Evans. Biggest trade, I think, Greg, you just gave yours.
Yes, I did.
Charleston Hughes.
That's what I was going to say, was Charleston Hughes.
Hi, Deb.
And the one biggest loss that the Riders had this offseason?
They just mentioned him on the interview, S.A. Marabere.
I co-signed on that one. I liked him a lot.
Nick Dembski, Canadian receiver. You can never have too many Canadian starters, and losing one, we knew we were going to lose him anyway, but that's mine. There we go. There's the preview of the Riders. We all know what they've done. They're ready to rock. They're all in.
We've talked about them ad nauseum for the last how many weeks?
I'm just excited that football's back and we actually get to see some real football. I know this week's preseason, but
we're 10 days away when this releases from it. No, we're 10 days away from right now, almost right now while we record from the regular season home opener.
Oh. A week from Friday.
So excited.
Yes, sir.
Now, moving on here, I said that we were going to have a Rider alumni on, and now's the time to do that. We've talked quite a bit about the defensive backfield for the Riders this offseason and how we think they're absolutely stacked back there. And it got me thinking, we should talk to one of the best defensive backs this team has seen in the last few decades. So joining us on the line right now is former Riders defensive back, one of the best ones that we've seen in green and white in the last two decades, Mr. Lance Frazier. Lance, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, man. Hey, man, you're being too kind, man. There's a lot of great names on that list. All right, so kind of keep me grounded here, man. It's been a long time since I've been in the Queen City out there, man. I miss Canada dearly. You know, I try to stay up on ball as much as possible, you know, the CFL game and whatnot. So whenever it's on TV down here, man, I'm tuned in. And, you know, when it's not, I go to ESPN 360 and, you know, I get it going on the computer. I run the HDMI cord into the big TV and, and we're rolling. So, you know, I've been watching.
Now, first off, you were born in Boynton Beach, Florida, and you went to school at West Virginia. Now, how does a guy go from Florida to Saskatchewan, and was that a tough transition for you?
It wasn't really that much of a transition. You know, I was born in Florida, and a lot of that shock happened for me when I went to university, when I went to West Virginia University, which is a great number of miles away from the beach city of Boynton Beach or Delray Beach, which is where I'm really from, and going up into the mountains of West Virginia where, you know, there's actual change in seasons and, you know, it's not, you know, 80-plus and sunny, you know, year-round. And you know, you see in winter and fall and all of that stuff and you're witnessing blizzards and all of that, you know, in the wintertime. And so that was probably a harder transition, you know, from leaving Florida to going to college. And then, you know, after that, you know, you mature a little bit and you learn how to adjust and you learn how to get along with different people from, you know, all over the country. And it's very similar to, you know, leaving Dallas. And actually, I forgot about this. When I left Dallas, I actually went to Germany to play in NFL Europe for a bit. So, you know, that also helped with the transition as well. I think that was more of a shock to me than you know, leaving the States and going to Canada. So I kind of had some practice with going over to Europe, talking about a different culture and, you know, people that speak different languages and all of that. Like, for instance, going to Montreal or something like that where they're speaking all French and all of that. So I had some experience there. But, you know, coming to Saskatchewan from, you know, from the NFL or from NFL Europe, yeah, it was a seamless transition. It really was. I admit that the winters or whenever it got cold after experiencing a very short summer, that was kind of eye-opening for sure.
We've lived here our entire lives. We're still not used to that transition of going from summer to winter, so you're not alone there.
Now, you joined the Riders in late 2006. What was your first impression when you got to Saskatchewan and to the CFL?
That's one of my favorite stories, actually. I never forget, you know, going back to your last question, this was one of the biggest shocks. You know, I get off of the plane, and the guy that was with me was Tony Plater. And he was, I think he was a part of, like, the player development or player personnel sector of you know, the franchise. And, you know, I get out of the airport, and, you know, first thing he wants to talk to me about is winter. And you know, it was fastly approaching. And while we're not there during the winter, he just wanted to talk to me about it. And I get out in the parking lot, and one of the first things I noticed was, you know, how many outlets were in the parking stalls. And I'm like, dude, like, what, you know, why do you guys have all these outlets out here? Like, people need to charge their cell phones that bad? Like what's going on? He's like, no, it gets so cold in the winter that, you know, if you don't plug your car in, it won't start. Like, it'll freeze up. So you need block heaters. So we sell all our cars up here with block heaters on them because of how cold it gets in the winter. I'm like, how cold does it actually get? He's like, yeah, upwards of minus 60 with the wind chill. I'm like, dude, put me back on the plane. I'm going back home. Like, I'm not going to be able to take this, man. You set me up for failure. Get me out of here. But, you know, it was very interesting. I think I got off the plane and I went to, I think there was a game going on. I never forget it. It was against BC at Mosaic Stadium. And actually, one of my childhood football teammates, in Delray Beach, Florida, was one of the star defensive backs for BC, and that guy was Corey Banks. We actually played Little League football together in Florida. And, you know, I'm on the sideline. It was kind of a surreal deal, and I didn't know he was on BC. I didn't even know he was in Canada at the time. And I'm watching this game, and I see this guy flying around the field, and it says Banks on the back. Like, what are you doing up here? You know what I mean? So that was my you know, first 5 or 6 hours being in Saskatchewan, and it was kind of one of those deals where, you know, I was like, okay, I started to get excited. You know, the fans at Mosaic, and one of my childhood friends and buddies are playing in the league, and I get an opportunity to compete against them and so on and so forth, man. That was a pretty neat deal.
Now, your first full year in the league, you guys won the Grey Cup. Take us back to that season, and what was that whole year like for you?
Well, that season was beyond special. I recall, the year before, having a lot of change. With me coming in, I didn't know Roy Shivers and Danny Barrett and all those guys that well. I started to get to know Eric Tillman right away because he was the guy that actually brought me in. I think they were phasing out Roy Shivers at that time. So we had Eric there, and then you got Ken Austin rolling in. And then you hear so much about Ken Austin and the history behind him, and he's the only guy that's won a Grey Cup for Saskatchewan, and that guy instilled a certain belief in us, in how we played the game, how we approached the game, a certain edge, a certain togetherness as a team, and he just really instilled a culture and a belief in us that I had never seen before, especially being a part of the regime that was on its way out, and just seeing how quickly things changed, and it was a bumpy year. Like it was an up and down type deal, but I think he built a great coaching staff that were great teachers and great motivators. And, it was a little bit more than just about football. Like, guys like Richie Hall, who had been there for a good deal of time already, and Este, and a couple other guys, man. They just really, Alex Smith, and they just really made us, feel like a unit, like a family. And, we took our bruises and we were resilient, man. And those are some of the things that we preached all year. And it just made us believe. And, before you know it, we got leaders on our team like, Kerry Joseph and of course, the great Eddie Davis. Omar Morgan had left. So Eddie was kind of like just the guy that just held us all together. Scott Schultz and Nick Davis. And I can go on and on, Fred Perry. They just brought that toughness and that edge, man, and we just had great leadership, across the board that when it counted, everybody was always saying this, we got to be hitting on all cylinders, man, and we went on a run, and you guys know, at the end of the CFL season, and then once you get into the playoffs, it's anybody's game, and the hot team typically, wins it all, and we just willed ourselves to be in that team.
Now, outside of winning that Grey Cup in 2007, what would you say is your greatest professional accomplishment?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I would say, man, just becoming a pro. Us as very young men, I started playing a game at 7 years old, and every little kid that's starting that old, his dream is to become a pro football player or play in the NFL or whatever it is. It started for me just becoming an NFL player as an undersized defensive back, and overcoming some odds. And, I didn't get drafted. That was one of my big goals, and, that didn't happen. But, I did it the hard way, the blue-collar way. I worked and persevered, and I had a lot of luck and some blessings as well. And you reach that pinnacle, and it's like, wow, I did it. And then to be knocked down a little bit, and out of the league and out of the job, and then getting another opportunity, man. And I tell you what, the 6 years that I spent in Saskatchewan, the game became very, very easy to me and more enjoyable. So just finding a way to overcome the politics and the business aspect of being a pro, and then elevating my game and becoming a leader and a captain myself at the pro level. That said a whole lot. That was a major accomplishment to be voted by, your peers, at the pro level after, being a captain on the high school level and the captain on the college level, to have that trifecta, at the professional level. And that didn't happen for me until I got into Saskatchewan. That was very honorable. And then another thing too, that I never saw myself really doing was being a head player rep for the CFLPA as well, which is also, you know, voted on by your teammates, you know, to look after them, their well-being, and from a financial standpoint, the health standpoint, so on and so forth, you know, fighting like a union worker for those guys. You know, it just said a lot about how they felt about me and my approach about the game and how much they respected, you know, what I brought to the table both on and off the field. So I would have to say, you know, those three things would be the pinnacle outside of obviously, you know, winning one Grey Cup and playing another two others.
Now, I understand you've got into the coaching aspect of football. How did you get into that?
It's funny, man. I don't know if it's a well-known thing, but, you know, just about every year that I played for, I played 9 years total, and just about every year, man, I always substitute taught. You know, you could always find me in a school building, you know, they had passion for kids. I didn't even go to university for education, but I just felt drawn to young people, man, and mentoring them and just helping, you know, them grow and develop. So naturally, once I was done playing, I started actually working full time at a high school. And while I was there, I ran into a guy named Ray Bias, who had, you know, over 30 years of playing and coaching football, who kind of, you know, talked me into, you know, going the coaching route. And, you know, I decided to give it a shot. What better way to impact young men, you know, both teaching and also coaching, which is another form of teaching, obviously. So I did that. I actually did that for 4 years at Newark High School as an assistant coach, defensive back coach, kick return specialist coach. And actually, man, some good news happened. This past February, I got my first head coaching job, which I just started in February. And we just actually finished up spring camp last week. And when I tell you, man, it's one of the most rewarding things to be able to do is to, you know, build a program, build a staff, impact kids, you know, help them, you know, achieve and reach their dreams and goals, which is for a lot of them, you know, to further their education playing football or through sports. It's rewarding, man. It's rewarding. It's exciting, and I'm also, you know, close to the game still, you know, and all of us, when we leave it, we have that itch, man, and to be able to serve two purposes, you know, you're scratching that itch, you're close to the game, and you're also, you know, just helping young people, you know, and that's very rewarding for me.
Obviously, football is a big part of your life, but what's Lance Frazier outside of football? Well, what do you do in your spare time?
I father, I teach, I adult. You know what I mean? I have a wife. We've been married for 3 years now. My wife, Tina, and I have two kids. My son, Kalen, who's 14 years old, is getting ready to be a high school freshman next year. My daughter, Lakai, who's 8 years old, who is moving on to the fourth grade next year. And they're both athletes. They play year-round, just about every sport. My daughter's a gymnast. She runs track, plays basketball, softball. Actually, no, softball. She'd be pissed that I said that she plays baseball. My son, he does baseball, basketball, football, track. So as you know, my schedule is packed. I don't get a free weekend. I don't get a free week. But I tell you what, there's nothing more enjoyable than, you know, spending time with the family. In the partnership of raising kids and holding things together. So, yeah, I spend a lot of time in trying to be the best dad I can when I'm not fathering and teaching and coaching other people's kids. So I take great value in that, man, and it's been fun.
And Lance, final one for you here. One thing, what do you miss the most about Saskatchewan?
Whoa. do you have another 30 minutes? I miss the people, to be honest with you. I miss the people. I miss true fans that actually give a crap, you know, about the game, but also, man, you know, very, very forthright people, very honest people, very considerate, loving, kind and just really, really, really excited to just meet the guy, you know, and try to get an idea of who we are as people. You know, I remember many, many times, man, just being around the city of Regina and just encounters with people, man. I never had a bad one. And people didn't necessarily want to talk ball. They wanted to talk, you know, life and kind of get to know us a little bit better. It was a hell of an experience. And I miss, as you know, America, we're going through our times right now. So you kind of miss being around a bit more sanity. You know, it's slower, calmer, it tends to be a bit more enjoyable. So I miss Canada for that. And then, of course, there's nothing like, you know, game night in Saskatchewan. There's nothing like it. It's an electric feeling, an electric vibe, and I miss that. I think any ball player is going to miss that wherever he is, but it was something a little bit more special about, you know, doing it in front of those good people of Saskatchewan.
Mr. Frazier, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Hey, man, thank you guys. You guys take it easy, man, and try to stay warm up there.
Well, we're on about almost 30 above right now Celsius. So
yep. That's going to last about 2 more weeks.
Yeah, about that. You're seasoned vet here. You know all about it.
Hey, I know, man. I know how it goes, right?
All right. Well, thank you very much. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take it easy.
One of the best riders in the last decade or so, Lance Frazier, here on the Piffles Podcast. Time now for the Cypress Hills Destination Area Piffles Player Profile. I really want to know. Tell me who are you. Now, I wish I could tell you a little bit more about him and have an interview, but that's coming in the next couple of weeks once we actually get the team back in Regina and we can get some interviews done for you guys. But number 76, Kyron Moore, wide receiver out of Austin, PA. You'll recognize his name from punt returns and kick returns in that first preseason game against Edmonton. Had 3 punt returns for 20 yards, 2 kickoff returns for 35 yards. He is kind of a really small guy trying to make this roster. 5'10", 165, born in 1996, so he's 21 years old. Lots of football ahead of him. Born in Bessemer, Alabama. Spent 4 seasons at Austin, PA from 2014 to 2017. Played 34 career college games with the Austin, PA Governors. Had 38 receptions for 553 yards and 3 touchdowns. Carried the ball a little bit as well. 39 carries, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns. But where he really made his mark was as a return specialist. He was a second-team All-OVC return specialist in 2016. He had 43 career kickoff returns for 889 yards and 1 touchdown, and 14 punt returns for 48 yards. And he's trying to crack a pretty loaded receiving roster here. But
loaded return roster, too.
Yeah, going up against Christian Jones, Chad Owens, Marcus Thigpen. He's in tough to make the team, but he looked really good in that first preseason game. And hopefully he gets a little bit of time with, I guess, maybe the second team in this upcoming preseason game.
Definitely didn't hurt his chances, that's for sure.
After that one kick return there, I think was deep in the went in the end zone there. I knew I wanted to see more. Anyway,
I don't know whether to put the crickets or the ba-dum-tsh. Groan.
But no, yeah, I also love preseason football. 76 for a receiver, I love it. But he looked really good. But yeah, he's in it tough, unfortunately, and he's not the tallest receiver in the world either, and that's usually a strike with Chris Jones.
But hopefully he can put in another strong performance, and who knows, maybe they keep him around the practice roster, and if injuries come up, I mean, we're without Marcus Thigpen, and if Chad Owens is hurt, we're going with Christian Jones as our main returner. We might need a second one in the first couple games. So definitely a spot available for Kyron Moore, and hopefully he can go ahead and grab it. All right, final segment here. Time now for Would You Rather. Amy? Let's hear it.
Do you want Would You Rather 1 or 2?
2.
2 it is. Would you rather have every cat or dog that gets lost end up at your house, or everyone's clothes that they forget in the dryer teleport to your house?
Give me the cats and dogs all day long.
Cat or dog. You can just have dogs.
Well, just dogs. Give me all the dogs.
Think of how many clothes you could have.
I have enough clothes. Think of all the dogs I can have. Think of how many dogs I don't have.
Yeah, I don't think that's a tough question for Alex.
I don't even know why you even asked him that one.
All the dogs or clothes? I'm pretty sure you could ask him all the dogs or money, and you'd have a.
But couldn't you imagine, like, how many clothes? Who's your favorite guy? I don't like how many clothes Katy Perry forgets in the dryer.
I don't really need Katy Perry's clothes.
Katy Perry's clothes. But you could sell them.
No, that's fine. I'd rather just hang out with the dogs.
You could sell them and then buy all the dogs or rescue all the dogs.
Just take all the dogs.
There's so much, like, work to do. Just give me the damn dogs.
But those are someone else's dogs.
But then they'd be your dogs.
And maybe mine. And I promise I would love them more than their owner.
What if Penelope got lost and she ended up at this person's house? This monster's house.
If that poor person loved dogs as much as Alex does?
No, I'd still be mad. I'd still go find her, but...
Wouldn't you rather all our towels and gotch teleport to someone else's house?
Well...
We forget them in the dryer. But you're
changing it up, though. Like, would I rather receive or would I rather give? Because if I'm giving something, obviously I'm going to give away my towels and my underwear to somebody as opposed to my dog. But if I'm receiving something, I don't want somebody's underwear.
But it'll be clean.
Yeah, at least they're clean clothes. They're from the dryer.
I guess so, but still, I.
those gotch were on somebody else's butt. Give me the dogs.
You don't have to wear it. You just get it.
But why would you want it?
Why not?
Want every pet that ever gets lost?
Because they're pets. They're puppies. So I'm assuming you take.
I'm going clothes. I'm going against everyone. On this one.
I'm not even a dog person. I take the dogs.
Well, you can have cats.
Oh no, I hate cats. I have one. That's enough.
I've got one dog. That's good enough. I don't eat every dog.
I do.
I need every dog, but I don't. I don't know which one I'd pick.
You would pick the dogs. You can't hide that. You don't lie to me. You would take the dogs.
You're probably looking at dog pictures on Instagram right now.
Actually, my Instagram hasn't been working all day, so I'm not.
Damn Android users, not being able to have Instagram today. Huh? Instagram was down for Android users on Tuesday. Mine didn't work for the first, like, 10 hours of the day.
I'm never on Instagram, so.
I only went on Instagram to try and win season tickets from Shaw.
Puppy pictures. They're all there.
I do follow Real Penny D.
Real Penny _D. Yeah. Right. She has a really good Instagram account. I don't know who controls that, but it's
that
a really good
picture
account.
You were sending around of her being chased, that might be the greatest picture of a dog on the internet ever. One.
That's a good picture. Anyway, that's going to do it for us this week here on the Piffles Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We got a game coming up this week in Saskatchewan. We're going to be at it, and maybe we'll do something pre-post game. Make sure you check Twitter and Facebook for all that kind of stuff there, and then we'll recap it next week and look forward to the regular season, and I am looking forward to it. This is going to be great. The start to the Rider season is upon us.
I love that this offseason was so much shorter. It was great.
Something in the news every week, it seemed. It was just whatever they did, they nailed it this year.
And it was actually physically 2 weeks shorter.
Yeah, well, that helps too.
And I think the Riders are all in this season, so there's high hopes for this team, and hopefully they can follow through on it.
So make sure you join us next week where we're going to recap that preseason game against Calgary. We'll share our thoughts on how the starters looked and if there's somebody that might have stolen a starter's job. We'll recap the final roster. We'll discuss that. There's going to be a whole bunch of moves. We'll talk about that in the opening kickoff. Maybe we'll see a surprise cut or two. We're going to preview the Riders' season opener against the Argos Friday, June 15th. We'll talk to the Argos fan cast about that. We'll have our Tallgrass apparel engaging with the enemy, Cypress Hills destination area Piffles player profile, and much, much more. So check out piffles podcast.com where you can find the latest Riders and other CFL content like Tuesday Takes, CFL Slants, Power Rankings, previous shows, interviews, and much more. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter. Follow us at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at Safamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
And I am at RealAmyD.
Give us a like on Facebook as well, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. And as we were just talking about Instagram, check us out there as well at PifflesPod. And check out the website, of course, as well, piffospodcast.com. Check out our fan contest while you're there. Over $2,500 in prizes to give away. We just actually drew for our first winner, and we're going to be drawing for our second, our week two winner. And you're going to hear from our week one winner next week on the show. You're going to learn a little bit about their Rider pride, what makes them a Rider fan. And if you want in on that, just enter in. It's super simple. Tell us about your Rider Pride, what makes you a fan, and you're entered in. So we'll have 20 weekly winners throughout the entire regular season, and in the final week of the year, everybody, whether you won or whether you didn't win, everybody's entered into a big drum, and we're going to do a great big grand prize giveaway there as well. So enter in. Piffle's Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. A special thank you goes out to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out her Facebook page, Kathy Festian Royal LePage. Tallgrass Apparel, Cypress Hills Destination Area, and Coney Island Poutine Cafe for all their support to help make this show possible. Thanks for listening. We're going to leave you with some more Beauty Killed the Beast. Check them out on Facebook. Here's their song, Hometown.